Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. Not the GAA Hour football show, not the GAA Hour hurling show. It's just the GAA Hour now. So we're going to bring you the best of football and hurling right up until Christmas or right up until the National League starts. Mikey, as you say, we're a dual podcast now.
Yes, and we're dual stars.
We're all dual stars. We're dual podcast stars. Coming up on today's show, by the way, okay, I'm joined in the studio by Mikey Stafford and Conan Doherty, two regular voices on both podcasts. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk to Donal Maloney. He's half of the management team just ratified by the Clare County Board, Gerry O'Connor being the other one. They're taking over from Davy Fitz. They've won 321s in a row. So really excited to talk to him, see what he thinks about, you know, the whole Clare setup, how they're going to, you know, go about their business as new Clare managers, because of course it is a step up from under 21 to senior for players, so of course it's the same step up for managers as well. We're also going to talk to Andy McEntee, Ballyboden manager, former Ballyboden manager now, he's current Meath manager. He's had some things to say about the Dublin Club Championship. I've had some things to say about the Dublin Club Championship. This could be an absolutely beautiful relationship. So he's coming up later in the show. We'll obviously talk to him about what a great job for him being a Meath man, being given the manager's job in Meath. First of all though, lads, I want to talk about player statements. Player statements. I'm loath to agree with Joe Brawley. I don't want to start off the show agreeing with Joe Brawley, but I just have to this time. It's a bad habit to get into. They're nonsense. They're PR exercises. I believe that. I don't care if Rob Henley wants to release a statement to tell me that he's not going to quit, that he can't understand what's going through his head, that he's grateful for all the support and the messages.
So classy.
What is the point of these lads? Please explain to me.
I'll play devil's advocate here for a second. Like, I can sort of see what you're talking about, but my point of view is if he doesn't address it somehow, I mean, he has dropped a clanger. I mean, he probably feels a little bit responsible in his own head. He knows everyone's talking about him. So many stories been written about him. If he goes and tweets something normal, like whatever he's cooking for breakfast or whatever it is, people will start slating him about that final. And like, when people will ask him, what are you thinking? What's going on? What's inside your head? Tell us something about this game, like, you know, get it out of the way and then start moving on with your life. So I can start to sort of maybe see what he's thinking.
Can Joe Brawley not, Joe Brawley with his tens of thousands of Twitter followers, Joe Brawley who follows 10 people on Twitter or whatever, can he not understand the power of Twitter as a platform for people who do want to make a statement? And we'd be slagging off Rob Henley if he, as Conan says, if he ignored it and went back to tweeting about appearing at Web Summit, which is seemingly a crime for an inter-county goalkeeper
but
to
would
do.
Would we now? Because would we be saying anything about Rob Henley if he just went about his own business, sucked it up? Because let's be honest,
we wouldn't, but those egg-shaped icons on Twitter would be.
Yeah, would he made an awful mistake, and you'd want to have a heart of stone not to feel sorry for Rob Henley. There's no question about that. He made an awful howler. Wasn't his fault. He trained, you know, it was his fault, but like, he didn't go out meaning to do that. My argument is, like, he's coming out with a statement 2 or 3 days later. Like, Rob, deal with it for a while. Like, I don't want to be reading how I can't, and put a picture of himself up on the, like, on the Instagram thing. Like, I can't begin to describe. Here it is. I'll never be able to fully describe what was going through my head at this moment. Come on, Rob. What I was expecting to be one of the best days turned out to be the opposite, and it breaks my heart that I didn't come true for my team and county. I don't need you to tell me that, Rob. I know that.
Is it much, before your head explodes here, is it much different to an interview? Like, whereas, like, you didn't get a chance to talk about it afterwards, maybe you didn't want to. And I'll give you an example. Aidan O'Shea against Fermanagh, we're not going to get into whether or not he dived or not. But I was trying to interview him afterwards. He didn't want to talk, of course he didn't. But then that nearly puts me in a bad position where I need to write something about this incident. So instead of me writing Aidan O'Shea's words, which would have been much better, and it would have made my life a hell of a lot easier.
Amen.
I have to give my opinion, and then my opinion doesn't go down well or whatever, it upsets Aidan O'Shea. Whereas if he just comes out and gives his side of the I will just print those words instead. So Rob Hennelly, maybe, instead of having everyone else talk about it. I mean, we're always giving out about players not talking enough. Mm. Like, maybe because it's Instagram, people just think, oh, what's this about?
Well, but that's a good point, because it's a new, it's social media now, and it's new for everybody. And like a traditionalist will go, you know, an interview might be okay. Whereas if you put this up, like you have Jamie Carragher, who complains about any picture coming from a dressing room in England on Instagram. He slates Arsenal players
until
for having
he appears in pictures in dressing rooms.
Having
himself.
The temerity and the gall to actually give us a picture from Instagram. I love those pictures on Instagram of the team from the dressing room. But maybe it is an old-fashioned way of looking at it, and because, like, I have the issue with Instagram for some reason rather than
tell
what
you,
was
the,
it?
The new way of looking at things is to set up push notifications on Twitter for Rob Henley, Lee Keegan, and Aidan O'Shea, and then have a look at our Google Analytics a couple of days later, and you'll see how being quick to turn around stories about these players' statements is not a bad game to be at.
People want to. People obviously there's an appetite there. You know,
why are you giving away the secrets? Like, jeez.
Do people not know about push notifications on Twitter?
The one issue I would have with I've no idea what a push notification on Twitter is.
Don't worry about it.
I'm new. Look, I'm new to the industry. The thing I have issues with Joe Brawley with is that he absolutely slated Rob Hennelly because he was an easy target, right? Whereas if you're going to be consistent about these player statements, you're going to be consistent with Lee Keegan, who released one.
Yeah.
Saying
and
thanks
did last
very much.
Year.
And did last year. You're going to be consistent with Aidan O'Shea. Now, Aidan O'Shea's came out afterwards. But Joe Brawley, because Lee Keegan is one of his players of the year, who's obviously a warrior, you wouldn't have one bad word to say about Lee Keegan as a footballer, doesn't make those type of mistakes. Suddenly his statement is completely brushed. But Rob Hennelly, who made a balls, you know, of a couple of balls in the All-Ireland final, he's easy prey. So Brawley was, you know, I think he's a bit unfair on Hennelly in that regard.
Also comparing Rob Hennelly to like two of the most taciturn footballers of all time, Derry's, what was his name?
Damien McCusker.
McCusker and to Stephen Cluxton.
There's a lot of McCuskers in that Derry team because every anecdote he has is about a McCusker.
But like comparing Rob Hennelly, who's, you know, a web, you know, works in online kind of web development, spoke at Web Summit, who's obviously quite a confident outgoing guy, comparing him to Stephen Cluxton, who, as you have told us before, isn't the most outgoing of people, and the quietest of his Derry teammates. It's like, that's a sample of three goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Oh, Rob Henley's weird for a goalkeeper.
Completely unfair. And it's like Bernard Brogan is often used, oh, he's not playing well this year because he's doing too much in the media. Like, it's his job. Yeah. His job is in the media. Like, come on. Like, it's not, you're not comparing like with someone who's a teacher and a private person to someone whose livelihood is actually being out there and being in front of camera. Like, it's completely unfair.
I mean, there were some elements in Brawley's piece where you were, like, he's going about celebrity losers. I like that sort of phrase where, you know, these people nearly taken, not pride, but it was like they have a chance now to they speak, that they've had this sort of monumental loss. And we were in a bar, my club back home lost the intermediate final at the weekend, and we were talking about these statements because we were starting to compare ourselves to Mayo and losing and stuff. But then one of the lads, big manly man, started slating him as well. And he pointed at the TV screen where like all this shit was happening in Haiti. And he's like, do you know what I mean? A hurricane is wiping out thousands of people and these boys are releasing statements about losing a match. And it was like a reality check you were getting. But at the same token, you look at like, someone like Wayne Rooney, who got dropped from the England team the other day, and you type in Rooney fronting up on the Twitter. And there was just thousands of tweets, fair play to Rooney, fair play to Rooney, coming out and talking, coming out, like, you know, but that was just because he sat in a press conference and did it.
Fulfilled the media duty as
captain.
Yeah.
But, like, there was nothing really different except Henley's just did it on Instagram instead of in a press conference.
Yeah, I think in a press conference or in an interview, you are putting yourself out there to be questioned about something and you're getting into it. Like, the Instagram thing, you can never be questioned. It's a nothing, like, I do agree that it's a PR. I thought Henley's read like a PR thing. I think I even disagree with releasing statements when you retire. They're all the bloody same. They go through the same stupid template, GPA template, where you thank your teammates, you thank your family.
You'll always be a fan.
Yeah, you always be a fan. You've soldiered for so many years, etc., etc. And they're a waste of time.
Don't forget, you're going to concentrate on your club career.
That's it, yeah, because, you know, club is what matters. And it's the same, like, the same template for every single retirement. And why do amateur players need to release any sort of a statement to be retired?
Hey, we learned today there's only one way to retire, and that is on Daryl Kinnaird's Ready on the Gwent show.
I have to say, I begged Mark O'Shea to come on the podcast and give us the scoop, but Daryl O'Kinnaird has them all locked down. That local radio in Kerry is a strong pull.
That was Radio na Gaeltachta.
Or Radio na Gaeltachta.
Right. So do you think there should be nothing when a player retires? I mean, I know when Paddy Bradley, well, he didn't actually retire. That was probably the problem there. But it's really strange, you know, when such a man is given so much service to the county, 15 years in his case, and so many scores and memories, and he's just gone, and there's nothing, there's no closure, there's like no opportunity to say thanks to him or anything.
Yeah, but how can you say thanks to a statement? Like, I mean, retire... Mm. Do like Mark O'Shea. I didn't see any stupid statement from him. I saw him announcing it on the radio. He's going to, it's nice to be able to report, he's going to come on the podcast tomorrow and have a chat with me about it. It's that much nicer way than these nonsense statements, and which just read so generically that, you know, it's out of control.
Where do you stand on the Henry Shefflin approach to holding a press conference where everybody knows what is about to be
brilliant.
Announced?
Well, that, look, Henry Shefflin's just on another level. Like, if Henry wants to call a press conference to announce retirement, he can do that. I'd love to announce a press conference for anything. It doesn't matter. But it has to be pointed out, Henry Shefflin, when we did GAA Jackass last Wednesday night with Ballyhill Shamrocks, by the way, I tried to play soccer last night. I can't run with it. There's a muscle just over my arse cheek, and yeah, it's at the bottom of my back, and I can't bend over. It's just killing me. But Henry wouldn't take part in the GAA Jackass. Isn't that disappointing? What? Henry, come on. It's just going to take 5 minutes. No.
Was he there?
It's probably good for you that he didn't.
Well, that's true. That's true, because I definitely would have been feeling it today. There's no doubt.
Yeah, that is disappointing. Like, if only he had Instagram to tell us why he didn't do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, we could actually, he could release something to explain what about his absence. All right, lads, we'll leave it there, because I'm delighted to say Donal Maloney, one half of Clare's new hurling management team, joins us on the line. Gerry O'Connor is obviously the other. They were ratified last night at a county board meeting. Donal, congratulations on the appointment. Is it fair to say you've both wanted this job for a while?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Colm. I think it's, you know, everyone who gets involved in coaching, particularly at a county level and an underage county level, you know, would have, you know, the aspirations or if things turned out for them. And fortunately, they've turned out for us, turned out well for us over the last few years. And we had a good run of it. So this is a different challenge altogether, though.
Yeah, are you prepared for a step up? You know, you've been massively successful, unprecedented really in Clare hurling. There's another level from under 21 for players to go to the senior. I'm sure it's the very same for management.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the players made a step already in 2013. The senior competition, what they achieved at senior level was hugely beneficial for us at 21 level as well. Yeah, and also from a management perspective, we well recognise that it is a significant step up compared to 21, and being able to help with that, we would obviously, you know, if we look back, Davey's given us a good panel of players and a very, very professional setup, and we have some continuity as well, and in the context of Donal Logue staying on.
Yeah, how did that come about? Was that just an obvious thing for you to do, or, you know, Donal very receptive to it? How did that conversation go?
Yeah, it was very positive. I worked with Donal Logue, and when Davey brought in the player, I was, you know, hugely excited by him doing that. I think he's brought a lot to the table. So that was one major factor. The players have a lot of respect for him, and also we have seen, I think, firsthand what he has achieved with maybe some of the players by working with them in terms of, you know, developing their skill sets. And so when we put all that together, we asked him to come on board with us, and he was very open to it.
Very good. You and Gerry are in a very, I suppose, advantageous position, as in you won't have to hold trial matches because you know all the players so well already. You won't have to get to know anybody.
Well, that's not really true. We know a lot of the players, but there's one thing there that was the leadership backbone of the 2013 All-Ireland. People like Paddy Donlan, Brendan Bugler, John Conlon, Dara Conan, Pat Kelly, Colin Ryan, just to mention just some that we know personally, but we wouldn't know very, very well. We wouldn't have worked with them on a training field or anything like that.
Yeah.
So we're really looking forward to engaging those guys, because people kind of maybe think that it was just the three in a row team or whatever that is making up the senior panel. I think it's far from it, right? There are a lot of others there as well that have played a major part in the past and will continue to do so in the future.
Yeah, I suppose in the context of an outside manager maybe having to come in, you know, you are well immersed in Clare hurling and you can more hit the ground running a little bit faster.
Oh yeah, I mean we've worked extensively for probably 10 years now from under 16 level up, and yeah, we would have engaged with a lot of players in the county. And we're excited about getting to work with a lot of these guys again.
Why do you think, looking in from the outside, they've lost their way a little bit since 2013?
I think maybe lost their way a little bit is probably
results-wise, anyways. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that. Well, if you look at history, Clare don't win All Ireland every year, or maybe they're not in contention every year, and I think, to be honest, 2013 was absolutely outstanding. It was fantastic, but maybe it was probably one of the youngest teams ever went to win in All Ireland, and it set very, very high expectations. A lot of these guys had won in 2009, minors in 2010 and 2011. So it was basically those groups that made up that All Ireland winning team of 2013. And they went through a period of, I suppose, intense activity, and they won a lot in a very, very short space of time. And it's sometimes difficult to sustain that. And I think Tipperary 2010 are a perfect example, where a team with 521 players beat Kilkenny in that classic All-Ireland. And, you know, they won maybe a Munster championship or two in the interim, but it probably took them a while to really mature and come back as they've done this year.
Yeah.
So I think there's precedent in terms of what's happened. It isn't because people lost their run of themselves or players got distracted or anything like that. I think that the work ethic amongst that Clare panel and amongst the management team in Clare was absolutely fantastic. And I think actually in 2016 they were on their way back up again, and like, we haven't won a national league in 40 years. So what they achieved this year was actually, in when people look back in the fullness of time, it is a very notable achievement.
Yeah, it seems that they ran out of steam a little bit this year. They played all their hurling, you know, towards the end of the league, and it's a long season, you know, Donal. I think putting that much emphasis on the league maybe might be something you might look at next year. You know, Clare seemed to take that league almost like the championship.
Yeah, I think that is true to an extent. And you know, when you're coming up from the second division, so to speak, that's you're on a run then, like, can you win the quarter final, can you win the semi, and you want to keep going, and you ended up having two shots at the final. But the other big factor as well is probably lost in the midst of all of this, is that Clare lost very critical players at various times through the year. And I don't think any county can afford to do that. I mean, Kilkenny even these days struggle to shore it up if they lose critical players. And you know, Clare lost people like Conor Ryan, they lost Tony Kelly for a period of the year, Conor McGrath, David McInerney carried injury through the year. So you know, people might think that we have a significant depth of talent, and we have, right? But at the higher end, I don't think any county can afford to lose players of that calibre for a long period of time.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Talk to us a bit about the dynamic between yourself and Gerry. It's a 50-50 joint management team. You're actually proving that joint managements work. I have a lot of examples where they don't work.
Yeah, that's what's already. There's lots of examples where they don't work. But look, we're good friends to start with. We talk a lot about hurling, and I wouldn't have been involved in Clare only for Gerry O'Connor. He asked me 10 years ago to get involved at under 16 level, and we've soldiered in lots of different directions since then. But we'd have a similar philosophy. We work and that philosophy is that it's a management team, and the people who work with us, like previously Jimmy Brown and Paul Kinnerk, it would have been very much, operating off a team effort. And with Don Logue and the incoming selectors and trainers, it'll be likewise. So that's essentially how it works. You know, with the two of us working side by side, we can cut through stuff more productively. So I think as long as we can maintain that, we'll be fine.
Yeah, do you get your hand, like, are you coaching on the field? Like, one takes the forwards, one takes the backs, or is that the way you split it up, or do you work together on things?
We work together on things, and in our under 21 days, we would have worked very much together. You know, we would have supported the coaches and got involved directly in coaching various different elements. Generally, we work as a team effort with the strength and conditioning coaches and the hurling coaches. But we would get stuck in on an individual basis with players or in specific drills and modify games as the situation required.
Yeah, who's the good cop and who's the bad cop?
We can both put on both hats. Right? We can both wear both hats from time to time. Sometimes we'll deliberately decide on who's going to be who on a certain day.
I want to talk to you about Clare's style of play, because it came to prominence really with the All-Ireland winning team in 2013, you know, this short running game, real skillful style of hurling. That's actually the style of hurling you cultivated with the under-21s, where, you know, Davy kind of took that on. Will we be seeing more of that style continued, or, you know, some people would be of the opinion that style might not work anymore for Clare?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of points here. I think, you know, firstly, in terms of the style of play, I think that we always try to mix it between, say, support play, good support play, and good passing with playing it long. And if you look back at any of the under 21 games, there's a very clear mixture of getting the ball forward as quickly as possible, or at worst playing it to the best to the advantage of your teammate. And I don't think Davy took on our style. I think he had a very clear view when he came back to Clare with regards how he wanted to play, and the two things dovetail together. I think there's an awful lot made of the style of play, and I think that the reality is, through that period of time, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, was probably at all levels was probably the most successful period in Clare's in Clare's hurling history, based on titles won, and things have moved on. Right, things have moved on. The sweeper system came to prominence in the intervening period, and Tipperary probably challenged that significantly this year on a couple of occasions. So things move on. So from our perspective, it's now a case of assessing what's the best way forward. Right? Our players are very, very adaptable. In a club scenario or in a club environment, they'll probably play a myriad of different styles. So today's players are, they're skillful, they're adaptable, they have good skills. So we'll decide on how we best go forward from here.
Right, okay. What's your stance on dual players? Because I know Davy had he banned it with Podge, obviously, 1 year, and then took him back the next year. Have you got a stance on that?
Yeah, I think in terms of the dual players, firstly, coming up to the underage ranks, we would always have, facilitators and supporters, guys to play both codes, right? Because it's not just hurling and football. You'd have guys who maybe play hurling and soccer, or guys who play maybe hurling and handball, and we'd always try to facilitate it. So it just wasn't a hurling versus football thing, even though that's where the clash primarily arises. In terms of our stance on it is probably well supported, maybe by looking at the facts, right, and looking at, I suppose, the details of players who've tried it over the last number of years. And there are quite a few, particularly in Cork and also, as you say, in Clare. And I think any future policy on that would be informed by their experiences, because I would know a number of players who have tried it and probably have spoken briefly to them on the fact, right? But I'd like to tease it out a bit further because it is challenging, especially if you have to go through the qualifier route. That's where it clashes. You can probably meander through the league, right, and get by, right? But once it gets into championship, and if both codes are travelling through a qualifier route, that's when it becomes probably very, very difficult.
Yeah.
But we would sit down with players who have tried it, right? Because they've tried it with the best intentions in the world, with great determination and great willpower and so on, right? But they're the best people to tell the story as to what's possible and what's not.
Yeah, Podge seems pretty determined, and I suppose his father involved in the football is the draw there.
Yeah, of course, yeah, absolutely, and Podge is a super guy, and
Podge seems to be able to do both.
Yeah, he has tried to do both, absolutely, but I suppose you'll judge in terms of how well you can do it based on the performance and individual codes.
Yeah, exactly. What's the plan now? When are you going to meet the players for the first time?
Well, we need to sit down with the management team in the next few days, and we'll plan that out, right? But we hopefully the next couple of weeks, the county championship is still in full flow here, with senior intermediate and senior B on this weekend. So players have been very, very busy. The semi-finals were only played a couple of weeks back, right? So players have been very, very busy. So I think we maybe give them another couple of weeks before we get them together.
Yeah, okay. Listen, well, Donald, thanks very much for taking the call and best of luck for the year.
No problem at all, Colin. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Very impressive speaker there, lads. Donald Maloney, really looking forward to seeing this double management team in action. I talked to Podge Collins and I said, which one will I ring, Podge? And Podge goes, it doesn't matter. They're both very, very good. So, highly rated 321s in a row. And finally, a clear manager will talk to me. That's what I'm most excited about.
Two clear managers.
Access all areas with Clare now. Wexford on the other hand.
Wait till the season starts.
Yeah. But joint managers, lads. I mentioned it to Donald there about joint managers not working. Like, they are really good friends, number one, which he explains. And that helps. You know, we look recently at the Mayo joint management team. Didn't work too well. Roscommon football didn't work too well. The one that jumps out at me always when I think of joint managers is Roy Evans and Gerard Hooley.
Yeah.
That was doomed to failure straight away. There has to be a boss and a subordinate.
I think Liverpool always knew there that. It was just like, you're joint managers. Don't worry
sure
about
right.
Evans.
Sure, right, yeah. Roy, that's okay. Don't worry about Hoolier. More better qualified than you. Much better manager.
It can't work. Like, there does have to be someone calling the shots. And that's the thing. If you're in any sort of role of responsibility, you're there because you can make the best decision. Not everyone might agree with it, but you have to stick with your own conviction and say, this is the way forward, like, and hope that it does work out in the end. And my only example or my sort of experience with that would be with an under-16 team where I brought one of the lads in to help out with the team, but I would have thought that we were joint managers, and then when it came down to it...
You were Julia.
Yeah, no, I was calling all the shots, yeah. It was like, we would talk about it, and it was nearly like the Brian Clough thing. After a while, we would agree that we're going to do what I want to do. And you have to have that. Like, when a new live or die, someone has to live or die by their decisions.
But this is, and that's all makes sense to me. And you have a lot of history and a lot of examples to prove that you're right. Mm. But these fellas won two Munster minors, 321 All-Irelands, and they work completely 50-50. There's no boss. There's no undercard. They're working 50-50, and they are a successful example of joint management working. So maybe they're just breaking the mould here.
Or maybe there's a level you can go to, and then you get to senior intercounty, and there's more media interest. You have to deal probably with the county board a bit more. Maybe the pressures do come on externally on a relationship, or maybe these two are going to break the mould. I hope they do.
That's a very good point, because I did mention to Donald, obviously, about it's a big step up from under 21 for players to senior. And some of them make it, some of them don't. So for a management team to make it, and the media is a great example, this scrutiny, will that create that extra pressure that the two lads can't handle? And it works so well under 21. Because let's be honest, if you're not really, really into hurling, Donald Maloney and Gerry O'Connor, their names don't jump out at you as, so they've basically had an easy life with the under 21s, massive success. a few losses with Clare, a lot of scrutiny on this unbelievable team that won in All-Ireland and seemed to have faded away. Maybe that might be a struggle.
And then, of course, with Davy Fitz taking the Wexford job, you know, there might end up being a rivalry down the line there then if they come to play Wexford.
That'd
or whatever.
Be a great rivalry, that.
I don't know if it could be a bigger rivalry than the rivalry they probably already had with him as the senior manager with his interests and them as the under-21 managers with their interests. I'd say they'll probably get on better now that there's a country between them.
Yeah, and Donal O'Cusack actually still on that card. That's a nice move by them. And Donal made the point that he spoke to so many of the players and they spoke so highly of Donal Logue, and Donal works with Donal Logue. So, you know, it was the natural thing to do to bring him on. Because the easy thing to do would be to rip up the script and go, this is our gig. You know, let's just banish all memories of Davy. The players wanted rid of, you know, wanted rid of him in the end. I don't want that to sound in a horrible way, but, you know, it was a difficult decision for the players. But to keep Donal on, you know, it shows maturity and shows a lot of confidence as well.
And I'm just, Donal's going to be big for them as well, but I'm just still trying to figure out how it's going to work, like, down the line. Like, obviously, you don't have a lot of ego there, which is great, and you can work with each other and you trust each other and compromise in decisions, but when it comes to it, especially in a game situation, when you have to change something, it could be something as simple as, I want to put him back into the sweeper role. The other person doesn't. Who decides then? Like, whatever he does or doesn't, the other guy is calling the shots.
Well, selectors come in then. It's a, you know, it's obviously a vote.
Yeah. Have you ever had anything like that?
Not really, no. No, just usually management. And, like, I mean, look, it's such an old tradition as well in GAA. Like, it causes hassle. If I was a GAA manager, I wouldn't want any selectors. You have to live and by your own decisions. I'd like people that are with me on my management team, but I'm calling the shots here. I don't want somebody... I don't want to be beaten on a vote, a selectorial vote on something I want, and it's I'm the manager.
Absolutely,
it's nonsense, old-fashioned thing, as far as I'm concerned.
But we did, between the three of us, we did a piece on that picture of the 23 strong Dublin backroom team. You know, whether you've got selectors or not, you are in charge of. But you're not just in charge of selectors; you're in charge of. There's an army of staff there now, and it's not just the Dublin footballers. It's the Tipperary hurlers. The Clare hurlers have this massive backroom team as well. So, in some ways, maybe being joint managers means you might. You might have to look after a few less people because you can actually split, you know, right, well, you chat to the physios and I'll chat to the stats guys, because the amount of people you're actually in charge of now as an inter-county manager is ridiculous.
Yeah, you really do need to be a facilitator like Jim Gavin, really, to do a good job at it. Right, lads, up next we're going to talk to current Meath manager Andy McEntee.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, delighted to say I'm joined by Andy McEntee, former Ballyboden All-Ireland winning manager now after last weekend and current Meath manager. Andy, I was reading your comments about the Dublin Club Championship with a lot of interest because, you know, I have similar opinions on the way it's run. It must be a very frustrating experience being a club manager in Dublin.
It is, but the truth of the matter is, I suppose it's the same everywhere. I've managed to be with, I was with Meath Miners for a couple of years, and then with Ballyboden and with club teams before. And the truth is, managing club team at the moment is way more difficult than managing a county team.
Yeah, in what regard? You don't have your players, obviously.
You don't have your players. You don't know when you're playing. I mean, games are put off at the drop of a hat, and it's very frustrating. And you're trying to make demands on club players that are bordering on unrealistic, in that you're saying, okay, well, you know, you have to time your holidays around this and around that, and you're not quite sure whether you're even going to be playing at that time or not. So there's a lot of things that are out of your control and out of your hands, and it makes it a very frustrating experience at times.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to point out that it is in most counties around the country. The reason I'm using the Dublin example, Andy, is because they play their club championship as a knockout. You know, so they're not even guaranteeing their club players more than one game. A lot of them, you have Plunkett's out early this year, the likes of Alan Brogan, you know, Garrett Smith, Declan Lally, these fellas, no club football, you know, after April. So they're a unique kind of a unique example where it's run off on a knockout basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's very severe.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way it's seeded, you know, the stronger teams, by and large, the stronger teams play one game at the start of the year, back in April. And then you're waiting around, you know, until, you know, because you're a betting man, you'd say Dublin are going to be in the business end of the championship every year. You know, whether they go ahead and win it or not is immaterial. It means you're waiting around from April to September stroke October. For what? For one game.
Yeah.
And you know, the amount of effort, I know the amount of effort that our lads put in, and it's no different from any other team. I had the same to say last year when we actually managed to beat Kilmacud. So, I mean, the same applied for them. You guys work and one game, and what have you got for it? And it's very hard to take. And long term, you'd have to question whether guys like that would continue to play football.
Yeah, what's the frustration like amongst players? You know, you said long term whether they would give up altogether. You know, is that level of frustration very high?
It is. Yeah, I as I say, we were fortunate enough to get the year we got out of it. But having said that, certainly the younger fellas coming onto the panel with us, they're mad to play football and they wanted to play all summer, and they're waiting and waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden it's over, and it's difficult for them. It's difficult for them to take. And you'd say, well, why wouldn't I go away to America for the summer? Why wouldn't I go off interrailing for 6 or 7 weeks or whatever? How do you hold on to fellas like that and say, I look at, you know, we have a big game coming up in October.
you can only
say that a certain amount of times.
What about this 13-day rule? You know, that's not enforced at all anymore. That's just a rule that's just completely forgotten about. There was 5 weeks before Dublin played Laois in the championship, but there was no club matches played there. Have you brought like concerns like this to the Dublin County Board and asked, you know, why the 13-day rule isn't enforced, and why, when there's gaps like 5 weeks, can they not fit something in?
Yeah, look, I know Ballyboden and various clubs have expressed their concern over issues like that. But, I mean, the other question I have to be asked, why is there a 5 week gap between Dublin playing one round and the next round? I think that's one of the simplest solutions to all of this, is that you play the county championship. Let's face it, there's, what, 32, well, 30, you take New York and London into it. But it's not a huge amount of teams. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out this can be squeezed into a very short period. But then again, you're looking at revenues and money comes into it, I suppose. But that is one of the, I mean, the inter-county season is stretched out way too long for the amount of games that are in it.
Yeah, I think everybody would agree with that. What did the Dublin County Board come back to you with as a matter of interest when you bring your concerns to them?
Well, to tell you the truth, I leave that to somebody else. The bottom line is county managers, and I'm wary of the fact that I'm going to be I'm on the process of being, I have become one. County managers want access to their players. I think it's overdone myself. I'd like to think that my attitude would be different, but, you know, poacher turned gamekeeper and all that sort of thing, you don't really know until you find yourself in that situation. But 5 weeks between inter-county games surely does allow a period for clubs to get some games played.
Yeah, I always use Jim McGuinness as the example here. He managed Glenties to a county title, you know, big club man, and then he managed Donegal and he wouldn't release his players to the club, you know. So I think you haven't, I complain about it all the time, but I haven't managed an inter-county team, so I can only imagine the commitment that's required for that level and the risk of releasing players back to clubs and injuries and inter-club arguments and maybe ruining the dynamic of the inter-county panel. You know, there's obviously reasons these lads are doing this. It's not Jim Gavin uniquely. There's lots of them. Fitzmaurice does it, like I mentioned, McGuinness does it. There's a reason they're doing it. And I don't know, the argument is there whether the two actually can mix together.
Well, the most successful team in inter-county competition over the last 15 years have been Kilkenny.
Yeah.
And they would say, okay, we're not talking about football here, we're talking about hurling. I say, okay, but the same structures apply. And Brian Cody and the Kilkenny County Board set their stall out. These are when championship matches are played. And unless there's an exceptional event, those games go ahead. And it hasn't done them any harm.
No, and when Tyrone were winning All-Irelands, Mickey Hart had the same attitude as well.
Sure, and the problem is somebody comes along. It's like the new way of, you know, the system's way of playing football. Somebody comes along and is successful by doing something, and all of a sudden everybody else follows suit.
Yeah,
and now nobody wants to let their club players available. So it takes a little bit of courage and a little bit of balls to turn around and say, okay, I'm releasing players to their clubs for a week or for 2 weeks or whatever. And I say, I'm slow to make rules and I don't want to be making rules, but I'd like to think that I would have a certain amount of sympathy for the club scene when the situation arises.
Yeah. And what do you think the solution to it is then, Andy? Is it to shorten the inter-county season, or is it just for county boards to get a bit stronger, like you say, and stand up against the managers and say, look, we've got a 3 or 4 week break. It's going ahead whether you like it or not. Like, county boards imply the managers as well, you know.
Sure, yeah. But the inter-county season, I think the whole thing definitely needs to be restructured. You look at the games. I mean, realistically, you look at the All-Ireland race at the moment and you say, is it a good competition? Sure, there's great interest in it, but is it a good competition? And by that I mean, are there a number of teams that can win it? Now, if you went out in the street at the moment and asked 100 people who's going to win the All-Ireland next year, you get a range of answers. I'd say that's probably three wide. You get three possible different answers. The club, All-Ireland club competition is a fantastic competition.
Yeah.
There's at least 20 teams in Ireland that could win an All-Ireland club. That's a real competition. So that, you know, you have to, the resources that have been spent at the moment on GA are all aimed at, I said this at the weekend, they're all aimed at 0.5% of the playing population. That's what inter-county players represent in the country, about 0.5%. I'm probably being generous at that. It might even be less than that if you need the exact figures. But there's so much time and so much money, and all the resources have been aimed at that 0.5%. Whereas, as I say, the whole season, Mayo, or who kicked off the Ireland this year? Was it Mayo over in Roscommon? Roscommon in New York?
Roscommon nearly beaten, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Like, Connacht kicking off the Ireland Championship. You know, how many teams are we talking about over there? And then you have Mayo come along now and they're under pressure to finish their club competition. That whole, realistically, if you looked at Division 1, the league has turned out to be a really good competition now, because there is genuine competition. The games are close and people are, I think, are paying a little bit more attention to the league than they used to. So if you took Division 1 and Division 2, there's 16 teams. You divide that up into four groups. You played a round robin. You played every 2 weeks. Two teams come out to All-Ireland quarter-final, semi-final, final. You could start in June and you'd be finished by the middle of August.
Yeah, and have a division two as well.
Yeah, and have a division two then for, you know, you have divisions two and four for a second. And that, you know, I'm sure traditionalists will look and say, well, that's not fair. But, you know, is it fair at the moment? Is it fair for some of the so-called weaker counties there's nothing fair about it at the moment. It's all lopsided, and it's all directed at the haves rather than the have-nots.
Yeah, and it's mad when you have these conversations about club players. It all comes back to championship structures conversation, because that's where you know, if you fix that, you'll go a long way to fixing a lot of the issues within the GAA. But it's just so hard to get these changes across the line. As a matter of interest, Andy, when did you get your Dublin players, you know, the Michael Darmacaulies back after the All-Ireland? I'm sure they celebrated, and you're trying to say, look, we want you to enjoy yourselves and celebrate, but just, you know, remember we've a game next weekend.
Well, Michael, I didn't. The guys we trained, they were on a Saturday. We got together on a Tuesday and Thursday, and I had everybody with me on Thursday.
Right, that's an awful case scenario, isn't it?
For a game on Saturday. Well, it is, given that we had a large group of players preparing all year, or the guts of the year for one game. And it's difficult in that regard. And by the way, I'm in no way damning the Dublin players. I mean, you look at the two younger guys that were involved. We had four fellas on the Dublin panel. Two of the younger fellas, Colin Pascal and Shane Clayton, were with us. They were with Dublin under 21. So we win an All Ireland club on a Thursday. They play in a Leinster under 21 final on a Saturday.
Jeez.
Then they go through to an All-Ireland semi-final. They get beaten in that. They're in on the Dublin panel. And here we are, 21 months after they started training with us in the January previous, and you're expecting them to be fresh and be enthusiastic about playing again. It's unrealistic.
It is unrealistic from the top to the bottom, really.
Sure, it is. And now there is a proposal to try to have the same structure, but with a group of matches when we get to quarter final stage after provincial championships. That only makes it worse.
Yeah, well, that's a money making racket. That's filling Croke Park an extra few times, or filling provincial grounds an extra few times. I don't think they're fooling anyone. I said that to Pádraig Duffy. He was on the podcast. I said that's just a money making racket, and he says it's an improvement from where it is, which is fair enough for the inter-county game. It's not an improvement for clubs. It's not an improvement for the weaker counties. It just seems to be an improvement for, you know, the top few counties, and they're the ones that are going to fill the stadiums. And it's very obvious why that decision was made.
Yeah, well, I mean, even if you want to look at it, how many times was the stadium filled this year? They're not games. They're not contests.
No.
There's an awful lot of games. There's been very few genuine contests in the inter-county this year. Very, very few, handful. And again, as I say, if you had Divisions 1 and Divisions 2, there'd be a lot more contests, a lot more genuine games, 50-50 games, 60-40 games or whatever. And you'd wonder, would that attract a lot more people? And there's a lot of, no disrespect to anybody, but there's a lot of nothing games out there. And that's the way supporters are looking at it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any there. Finally, here on the Meath job, you must be obviously delighted. It's your own county. You've managed the minors. You've won an All-Ireland club. It's almost like you've been taking the steps up to the top job, and you definitely deserve your chance.
Yeah, well, look, I say it's obviously always a privilege to manage your own county. If you're in the management game, that's the highest honour you can get. And I would love to try and make a go of it. There is great support down in Meath. We're not unaware of the difficulties that we face and the gap that exists. But we'll certainly have a good go at it, I think.
What do you see? They seem to have lost their way. You know, they were the second best team in Leinster 12-13-14 and performed pretty well against Dublin in a Leinster final or two. Lost their way in the last couple of years. A little bit. What kind of problems do you see within the squad?
Well, I wouldn't actually. I haven't been with the squad long enough. But I mean, anybody look from the outside in would sort of say, look, we haven't been competitive. We have, you know, lost a number of key games where we were ahead. you know, at half time substantially ahead and managed to lose them. And that comes from a lack of belief as much as anything else. And there seems to be general acceptance both within players and me and Joe Public and me that we're no longer able to compete with Dublin. And I think that's the biggest challenge that we face is trying to change that self belief and that belief that we always had that we could compete with Dublin. I mean, people say, "Ah, Meath will always compete with Dublin." Truth of the matter is, Meath haven't competed with Dublin for a long time now.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge.
And again, you see the organisation that Dublin have in place. You see the number of players that they have in place. And you see the finance that they have and the help that they're getting from various sources. It makes it a big challenge.
Yeah, well, listen, best of luck with it, Andy. Thanks for taking the call.
No, it's all gone. Thank you.
Yeah, and another impressive guy, lads, Andy McEntee. Looking forward to seeing him, a lot more of him. With Mead, it wouldn't be a bold prediction to say he's going to improve Mead's fortunes. You know, he's very good. You know, on the club stuff, I don't want to spend too long on it because I think everybody's definitely in agreement that the Dublin Club Championship is a bit of a farce, and club players, like, I got a lot of reaction when I wrote on sportsshow.ie about it. And a lot of club players in Dublin, you know, liking it or replying back to it, that it's very tough when you're going 23 weeks without a game. And the worst part, then your heroes, your star players come back dying and come back with, like, you know, a sore hamstring,
compound hangovers.
And like Andy said, he didn't see Michael Darmacaulay until Friday, and the game was on Saturday. Like, come on, you know, something needs to be done about this.
I don't like that saying, something needs to be done, but what can be done, apart from, you know, say, restructuring the whole thing, because that's not going to happen. So what can we do? Let's help Dublin right now.
Well, I think the 13-day rule needs to be enforced by county boards employ the county manager. They're the boss. Why is the county manager the boss? How in this dynamic, when they interviewed Jim Gavin for the job, Jim Gavin was looking to them for employment, and then Jim Gavin gets employment, and then Jim Gavin tells his employers what to do. Like, there's not enough strength in county boards to stand up and say, excuse me, like Brian Cody, because Brian Cody doesn't even use his massive, you know, power in that kind of a way. Why can't county boards, now this is one fix, whether you agree with it or not, enforce the 13-day rule. It's a GAA rule. Enforce it. Maybe not before a really important game, but enforce it early in the championship so you're getting those two or three rounds played off. So when you come back from an All-Ireland final like that, you're not coming into round two. You're coming into maybe quarter-finals or semi-finals.
What bothers me about the whole thing is that it in Dublin and in other counties, let's say Donegal in recent years, it actually cuts the cord between inter-county and club.
Yeah.
Because you perform well for your club in April. You know, the Dublin League campaign is well underway. Jim Gavin has a squad. You're going to do very well to get into it. You perform well in October in the later stages of the Dublin Club Championship. Jim Gavin's just won an All-Ireland with his 26, 30 players and isn't going to come around to picking his panel again. He's in Rwanda flying cattle to Africa. If you perform well in the quarterfinal of Dublin County Championship, does that really increase your chances of playing for the Dublin Senior Footballers? Or is Dublin Senior Footballers now a closed shop, is it now? If you're not a good minor, you're not a good under 21, one of your teammates like Brian Fenton doesn't tell a under 21 selector that, you know, you're going well, where's your shop window to be a Dublin County footballer?
All down through the years you'd hear managers saying the panel's not closed, if you're performing well for your club you're going to get in. But there's no club matches going on, only league games, and how much are they going to read into that, because you might not be marking or the same kind of intensity. Now the Dublin League is, I've played in it, it's taken pretty seriously, you know, but at the start it's taken pretty seriously. Then when you get towards the middle in the summer,
there could be teams
down at the bottom that don't try, their chances gone, you know.
You know what happens there? Their players come down to play against us in Division 8 to make sure that their second or third team gets up to Division 7. So I'm telling you, it's doggy dog in Division 8.
Tough place to go there. What's that Rat Mines team you play for?
Portobello,
yeah. Going away to Portobello on a wet Tuesday night is no picnic.
If you can find a picture to it,
man. Back home, we got promoted for the first time ever into the top division, and we used to clean up in the last five or six games. We wouldn't win a game all season, and then when it got to the last five or six games, and no one was interested anymore, boys were on holidays, boys were focusing on county, you would get all your points then and you would stay up. And that would just be the same thing again next year.
Yeah. There's years Portlaoise wouldn't even enter the league. They went because, okay, whether it was right or wrong, they didn't enter and they actually just got challenge games from outside the county to make up. Number one, you're not showing everybody your hand. And number two, you'd actually get better games outside the county than you would against some of the teams in the league, because like the league doesn't really count for anything in Laois. You know, at least Dublin do take it seriously, so you get some competition. Right, anyways, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back. We're going to let you know what club games you should be going to this weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
19 club games this weekend, lads. If you want to go and see some club action, 19 finals. This is the club season really kicking into gear. I love this time of year. I love county final time. I love provincial club final or provincial club time. It doesn't have to be the final. The first round I like. I love other clubs from other counties playing each other. You look down through all these games this weekend, you see the same faces in each county. Like, I mean, Glenswilly in Donegal. You have Portlaoise in the final in Laois. You have Moorfield and Sarsfield in Kildare. You have Road in Offaly. You have Mount Leinster Rangers in Hurling and Carlow. You have Turles Sarsfield in Tipperary. You have Owlart de Balla in Wexford. It's the same old faces all the time. You have Cross McGlen in Armagh. Oh no, you don't have Cross McGlen in Armagh.
Oh, I see what he did there. See what he did there. Got it. That was good there.
This is who's in the Armagh County
final.
This is
going to be a long segment.
Cullyhanna and Mahery in the Armagh County final. And only, I want to actually tell you something before we get into this, lads, and it's a little bit embarrassing, but I wanted to go up to this Armagh County final because, look, there's going to be tears up here. Neither club have won a county title ever, never mind the fact that Cross McGlen have had a monopoly. There would have been tears anyway, but neither team have ever won an Armagh County title. But I have to go to Amore Park. Portlaoise going for 10 in a row in the county final. And wait till you hear this. It's going to be embarrassing. The Laois Miners from 1996 are being introduced to the crowd at half time in that game. I'm only 38, lads. I still have all my hair. I have a few grey hairs. I am too young for this nonsense.
Mikey, what would you say is worse, that or releasing a statement on Instagram?
I hope he puts a classy picture on his Twitter page. Are you all wearing matching suits?
Well, this is the other thing. Do I have to wear a suit? Like, I don't. There's actually no kind of details given about dress code. But it was at the hurling final in Laois last weekend, and it was like the team that was introduced was like the Camross team that won a Leinster in the 1970s. There was some of the lads dead. Like, we're Laois Miners in 1996. This is too soon for our team. Wait for our 50th anniversary where people are actually... you'd be delighted people remember you. You know, I'm pretty sure people remember the Laois Miners.
And you're still living.
Yeah.
You could wear your jersey, could you? I know you still have football boots from when you were playing for Laois. You still have your minor jersey. You could all wear them.
I do have my minor jersey and I have a minor tracksuit top as well that I could wear.
I don't think you were sentimental like that. I didn't think you would keep things.
It's framed in my parents' house, the minor jersey, and the medal is kind of in the middle.
In case of Jubilee, break glass.
Listen, it'll be a very proud moment, I'm sure, for all of us. But anyways, let's get back to this Armagh County Final. Like I said, neither team have ever won it. Cullyhanna have Kieran McKeever. They were in the county final and beaten by Cross McGlen in 2013. They have won two under-21s in 2012-2013. So they are up and coming, and they beat Cross McGlen the last round. So my money's on Cullyhanna for those reasons. You know, it's going to be a great game. Mahery have James Lavery, Aidan Forker and Stephen Forker of the Armagh senior team. So they actually have more county players. But I don't know, if you beat Cross McGlen, you know, if you don't win the final, you might as well just forget about it.
It's kind of a case of after the Lord's Mayor show as well. Have they given their best performance in the semi-final? And
yeah, see, Dublin against Kerry, they got carried away a bit and nearly got caught by Mayo.
It was a last second goal though against Cross McGlen, and so by all accounts they were on their way to getting beat, and it was sort of business as usual, except 2 points isn't business as usual for Cross McGlen, but maybe they just weren't. They didn't save their best performance for them. I do see Mahery, looking at the results, are cleaning up as well though. So Might be a good one.
Imagine the outpouring of emotion here, lads. Number one, your first title. Cross McGann have won 19 of the last 20, so no one's had a look in. So that alone, you know, I've said it already, but, like, I mean, there's going to be tears shed. There is going to, Conan, go to this mattress. Get us some reaction.
I'll be in Derry watching Slough Neil.
Slough Neil. They're going for three in a row.
For three in a row.
I'll just set up Twitter push notifications for the accounts of all the losers. It'll be golden.
Perfect. Portlaoise lads, I have to give them a shout, going for 10 in a row against their fiercest, most bitterest rivals, Stradbally, only out the road. I remember it was 2005. Portlaoise were in the All-Ireland final in 2004, only beaten by a point in the final. Like, by far and away, beat everyone in Leinster easily, beat Cross McGlenn in the semi-final, then lost to Ballina, who were on the road a long time. Then the following year, come play Stradbally in the county final, massive favourites, and Stradbally beat Portlaoise. If you know, the one thing about Stradbally, they're not great, but they have a bit of tradition, as in they're not afraid of Portlaoise, which is half the battle for a lot of teams.
They'll be pinning this podcast up on the dressing room wall. Yeah, they're not great, but...
But no, to be fair, they have had a very easy route to the finals, Stradbally. And they're not, let's be honest, Portlaoise are far and away ahead of most teams in Laois, so you'd be expecting Portlaoise to win. And 10 in a row, what an achievement.
Is Zach Toohey back for it?
Zach Toohey is back, actually. And
does he just come on and play?
No, they started him as a sub the last time. But like, when Zach comes on, like, I mean, the lift it's given, and it's incredible. A lot of people in Laois, you know, supporters outside of Portlaoise say it's an unfair advantage. It shouldn't be allowed. He doesn't play all year, and he goes, and it's not an advantage to Portlaoise outside of the final because Zach has to go back. So you don't actually have him for the Leinster club. That's why they don't start him. You know,
it's not an advantage that one of your best players lives in Australia, really, is it?
But it's the argument I make, Mikey. Like, I mean, you've got Zach Toohey. Imagine the advantage he is if he's living in Portlaoise and playing with Laois. We've lost him.
Yeah.
We only get him for one game during the year. It's not.
I think they've got that argument elsewhere, to be honest. Don't start calling
this an advantage. It's a horrible thing for Portlaoise to have Zach not in the country.
There's a wider general argument there to be had about every club. Like, I know, again, when we lost the intermediate final at the weekend, and we're talking about these boys who might retire and boys that we only had for the summer. And you're asking, are you going to come back next year? But they're living in Belfast now, so they're not as interested. They're a bit old. But they would still be so handy if you got them back for the summer at least. But then some of the boys are like, no, we can't keep doing that. We can't keep bringing boys back for the summer. But I don't see why not. Like, especially these boys who have given 16 years already to the senior team. It's going to help the panel then coming in. Where do you stand on that? Like,
I'll bring them back.
Like, boys, like, we need to create a culture. We can't just have boys dropping in. But it's not normal boys. It's boys who have been there and done it.
Yeah, and if you need to leave the country for work and stuff like that, it's not like you're choosing to transfer to some other team. Yeah. It's just life has taken you away and that's it. Mikey, what's standing out for you out of the whole 19? I know you're going to say Owlert de Balla. Outside of Owlert de Balla.
Oh, you're catching me.
No, Owlert. give you Owlert de Balla.
I only have these notes. Actually, I'm not really interested in Owlert. I'm interested in who they're playing. They're playing Clabon, who would be the club of Harry Keogh. They haven't won a county title. They've won three, I think. Their last one was in 1993. They're 3-1. Owlert are 5-1 on. You know, it'll be interesting. Is Davy Fitz going to be in Wexford Park? I presume he is.
Sure, he will.
He has to start doing his research.
How many are Owlert going for? Oh, no, they lost 2 years ago,
they
didn't
lost
they?
To my brother-in-law's team 2 years ago, Chamaliers, who are the only one to beat them since 2008. Right. So they are going for their 7th and 8th years.
And they're Leinster champions, and they obviously got over that hoodoo, and they were beaten in extra time by Shane Dowling's club in Limerick. What is it? In the Pearse League,
that's right, yeah. So, and their manager, Frank Flannery, went for the Wexford job and got beaten by Davy. So there's all sorts of little subplots there. So I think Wexford Park could be quite interesting this weekend, but unfortunately it's probably just going to end up in another Owlert de Balla victory.
Yeah,
they're boring like Portlaoise.
So that's how you pronounce it? Owlert
de Balla.
Conan, this is disgraceful. We're a dual podcast and you're asking that question.
Hang on, you asked me how to pronounce Mahery earlier.
You couldn't be any more. That's kind of Derry speak. That's different. This is a dual podcast and you're asking how to pronounce Owlert de Balla. You don't care about hurling. You're a fraud here.
Let's talk about Slough Neil and Derry.
Give us the lowdown in Derry County Final.
They're going for three in a row. This would actually only be their fourth title, so it's massive. Like, but they've won the hurling, they've won the reserve football, they've won the camogie, they've won absolutely everything they win, except now the senior football, which they're going for again. They're playing Loop, who have a bit of a resurgence going there. they would have won Ulster back in 2003.
Loop is my man, Johnny McBride, no?
Yes. That's the man. Still Paul playing. McFlynn, do you remember Paul McFlynn?
Paul McFlynn, very good too.
Yeah, Johnny McBride's managing the team though, actually.
Okay.
But then they've got a real young, fast team. Like, I'm just looking at the team sheets and it's like, Jesus, I remember some of these lads from minors and stuff, and it just looks good, but they'll know how to slack Neil. I think we'll get them over the line. And Mickey Moran's still there, and this is going to be, he's only third season in charge, and gotten the All-Ireland final already, won their third ever senior title, and now they're going for a fourth ever senior title. And I remember him from my Jordanstown days, like, and like, just, there's no one better than him. Like, I've ever coached or been coached by. His boys would just do anything for him, they walk through a wall. And then when Mickey Moran cracked up, you knew, like, it had such an effect, because he was so calm normally, like, and he saw the game so well. But I remember one day he just flipped at half time and we went out and absolutely hammered the team. It was madness.
Yeah, no, well, look, he's an intercounty manager that's gone back managing club, and you know, that's taken that step back down, and yeah, to immediately command respect in that,
yeah, that scenario. And in fairness though, it's such a good story, because he took the Kilrea job before Sloughney, but he did go through like a bypass operation and stuff, like, so it didn't look good there for a while, like, so he's actually come back from ill health and stuff, and now he doesn't do any interviews or anything, he doesn't like any of that, but it's such a good story personally for him, not that he would ever want any sort of credit for it.
Yeah, okay, right, listen lads, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to everybody for putting the show together. Please everybody go to these county finals. We're going to maybe review one or two of them on next week's show. Tomorrow, I'm delighted to say we're going to talk to Mark O'Shea on an absolutely incredible career, 3 All-Stars, 1 Player of the Year, the end of the O'Shea, the three brothers, stemming back how far, Mikey?
1994.
Wow, so, you know, we don't have an O'Shea on the Kerry team, and that's a little bit, that makes me sad, I don't know about the two of you.
And Darragh Kennedy's not going to have another O'Shea on his radio show either, they're all retired.
Is there not this minor guy, Darragh O'Shea, S-H-E-A, coming through now?
No, S-E's we're talking about, S-E's. Anyways, listen, good luck and see you next Wednesday.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.